Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Plain Talk Podcast. This is Rob, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about privatization, a fun Boeing flight. Well, maybe it wasn't so fun. My recent trip to Sun and Fun, the Southwest Airlines incident, and Matt's back. So, yeah, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Hey, Matt, welcome back.
Hi.
What'd you bring with you today?
A dog.
What's the dog's name?
The dog's name is Zoe. It's my girlfriend's dog.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot larger than most people expect. She's a lot larger than most people expect.
Are you talking about your girlfriend or the dog?
Yes. No, just kidding.
Oh, geez. No, Sarah's a sweetheart.
Oh, man. Actually, we should edit that.
Yeah, we'll take that out. No, we won't.
No, Sarah's in shape. We shouldn't talk about this. Okay, so Zoe's having an interesting night because she's pretty hyper. Not sure why. We're supposed to start recording about 2 hours ago, and she's been running around in circles for up and down the stairs 10, 15, 20 times. It's been interesting.
But I mean, it's been interesting. It, just to point out, it's actually been 3 hours since we were supposed to start recording. But hey, that's all right.
Touche. So I went to Whole Foods today.
Oh, yeah. What happened there?
My receipt was for $7.17. And I have this habit of, you know, talking to the cashier and saying, you know, okay, for instance, if my receipt is $18.92, I'll always say, that's a good year. That was a good year. She'll look at me really weird, like, no way were you alive in 1892.
But why today, was 1892? Or are you just saying
no, just
that
random, like, you know, okay, your total is $19.46. And I'll say, that was a great year. And people just look at me weird.
Well, World War II was over. You could make the legitimate argument that that was a great year. Yeah.
Yeah, but it takes about 5 seconds to click, I think, sometimes, because people don't expect me to say that was a great year when referring
what?
To
what?
A...
What? What do you mean it was a great... What happened?
The amount... No, not necessarily that. Just they don't expect people to refer to the amount on their Whole Foods receipt as a year. But in any event, my receipt today was $7.17. I bought 3 Runas. And I said, that's a great airplane.
I can imagine the confused looks that you would have gotten. Like, no, the Boeing 717. And they'd have been like, that's great. Crash your credit.
No, I actually think that the cashier looked at the receipt and was trying to think about like folding it somehow to make it like a paper airplane.
No, that like, would have been ninja. I would have liked that.
Which I give them a lot of credit. That was actually their initial response. I probably would have just sat there bedazzled for 10 seconds wondering what they were talking about.
Bedazzled or befuddled? Would you have been covered in jewels or would you have been confused?
Dude, it's after 10:30, so the word can mean whatever I want it to mean tonight. But yes, befuddled.
All right. Well, this episode brought episode. I'm Canadian-y. This episode brought to you by so far no one. So if you'd like to get in on the ground floor of an amazing podcast, that send us an email at podcast at plaintalkpodcast.com. If you're interested in promoting your business, I think we already accidentally promoted Whole Foods. Yep. This is being recorded with Intel products. And what I got an Audio Technica microphone. So if you are enjoying the sounds of my voice, thank Audio Technica. I do every day. That sounded really cheesy.
That actually reminded me of one of those old commercials that you saw back in the 50s. It's like, my toilet paper is 1-ply. It is blah, blah, blah. And, you know, those like little cheesy commercials. Which, speaking of which, do you watch John Oliver?
No, I don't.
He had the most hilarious thing the other day. He made this commercial. It was pretty funny. I'll have to show it to you after this.
Good sell, Matt. It's, you know, it's an audio podcast, right?
Nothing anyway. We can really talk about. Okay, wait. So I do have something important to say about the podcast. So if you're only going to listen to 15 seconds of the podcast today, this is the 15 seconds you need to listen to.
Please listen to more than just these 15 seconds.
Correct. Open up iTunes. Pull up the Plain Talk podcast.
I can hear the dog drinking water through the microphone.
Open up iTunes. Pull up Plain Talk Podcast and write us a review. That would be awesome. We would really appreciate that. 5-star review, preferably, though I don't think we're allowed to ask for that. I don't know, some rules, whatever.
No. If you like it, leave us 5 stars.
If you like it, leave 5 stars.
If you don't like it, leave 4 stars. And we can change, we swear.
Exactly.
Was that her?
Yeah.
Aw, that's so cute. I'm sorry, puppy. Go lay down. Anyway.
All right.
Yeah, iTunes, 5-star reviews. So those of you who are following us on the Facebook page, you may have seen a post that I put out today on ATC privatization. There was a bill, or the ATC funding bill that was tried to the FAA reauthorization bill from back in, I believe it was either February or March, that was tried to get pushed through, had privatization elements in it. And through the response of the pilot community, they were able to defeat that bill. And it was something that was talked about heatedly for over the last year and even longer than that whenever this issue comes up. But again, Chairman Bill Schuster tried to make an amendment to the FAA reauthorization bill, putting this privatization back on. And this morning I put a post out there to, hey, please click this link, follow it. It was an EAA link to write to your representatives and to say, hey, no, this is bad. We don't want this. And by 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, they had already put an update to the post saying that Chairman Schuster removed this from the bill. And once again, the response of the aviation community and the general public and those who are against this ATC privatization had a positive effect on something that really would have hurt the air traffic industry as a whole. And so I just wanted to say a real quick thank you to those that clicked on the link and participated, for getting out there and getting involved and helping to keep our airspace free and open. So thank you very much. Now, speaking of airlines, Matt, you stumbled upon a story about a Boeing flight.
I did.
What'd you find?
So the date was December 7th, 1941.
Wait a minute, that sounds familiar, like a date which will live in infamy.
Yes.
That's what Mr. Roosevelt said about it.
About December 7th, 1941?
Yes. On December 8th, 1941, he said, yesterday, December 7th, the date which will live in infamy.
Because of Pearl Harbor.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes, right. That makes total sense. I was immediately thinking back to my Whole Foods receipt and wondering what $19.41 would... how I have to get that total now to be able to say that was a... Well, actually, no, I can't say it was a great year, so we'll have to... I'll have to come up with something. Anyway, moving on to the story. So there was a Boeing 314. I don't know if it's a 314, like you say, 737, or if it was a 314.
Yeah, let's go with 314.
Okay, Boeing 314. It was called the Pacific Clipper. It was in New Zealand. And unfortunately, after the attack on Pearl Harbor on the morning of December 7th, 1941, it couldn't get home. And so it was the first commercial around-the-world flight. It flew westbound. It flew through rivers. It flew over deserts. It flew over... it avoided waterfalls. They really just... the captain, Robert Ford, he said he was essentially faced with a dilemma. After a week in the U.S. embassy, he knew that he had to get home, and they basically said that they were on their own for gasoline and supplies and had to go westbound.
Which is weird. If you're going to fly around the world, you typically go west to east to have the winds at your back.
But they had to avoid the Pacific.
They had to avoid the Japanese.
They had to avoid the Pacific. So they flew westbound, and it was 2,553 kilometers, open ocean. Let's see. That was actually the first leg. Long story short, because you know the thing goes on forever, and I was this is off of the Smithsonian Institute's website to give them credit, which is where we eventually found it. They went through Brazil, up the coast of Spain, Trinidad, finally landing in LaGuardia on January 6, 1942.
That's almost a month.
Yep. The total flight time was 209 hours, covering 31,500 miles.
Well, people complain when they have to sit on the ramp today for 45 minutes. These people had to get on this airplane. Well, I suppose they didn't have to get back on that airplane, but I certainly would have been along for the ride. But I mean, that's a month.
Yep.
Who packs for a month?
Yeah. They had to avoid a patrolling Japanese submarine. They had an engine fail and had to turn around and get that repaired in an area where they would have not normally had that kind of repair. It's a really interesting story. If you want to check it out, we will definitely post it on our Facebook page, social media, as soon as this podcast launches, so you can read the story for yourself.
Excellent.
Yeah. But I saw that a couple days ago and I thought it was a great story to share.
Wow. No, that's really awesome. And, it's overcoming adversity and captains, doing what needs to be done to take care of their ship and their passengers and crew. And they even rescued another Pan Am crew out of another location that mm-hmm. was
before they
risk.
Started. Yep.
Yeah,
they backtracked. Yep. They backtracked. And actually, if you read the article, there were other Pan Am airliners at the time, I guess you would call them flying boats, whatever you want to refer to. Yeah. And they actually got crews out of areas occupied by the Japanese or being attacked by the Japanese Midway Island just in time. I mean, these airplanes had bullet holes in them, but they got these people out safely. So
wow.
it's a really interesting story. I would definitely take a look at our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We'll have it up there and you can check out the article.
And speaking of pilots and captains doing what they need to do, we recently had an event here in April of 2018 of a Southwest Airlines Boeing 737 having an uncontained engine failure, which when we talk about an uncontained engine failure, we're talking about pieces and parts of the engine were not kept inside the engine cowling or the engine shroud. And unfortunately, in this case, they penetrated the fuselage of the aircraft and partially sucked a passenger out. And that's quite a bad thing to have happen. Unfortunately, this passenger sustained injuries in the event that did ultimately lead to them losing their life. But in the event, passengers and crew members on board that flight were working continuously from the time of the incident until they got on the ground and medical professionals could take charge of that patient's care. They were working continuously to keep that person alive in the back of the airplane, while in the front of the airplane, the captain and the first officer were working to deal with an unknown emergency, other than they knew that they had an engine failure. They knew that they had a decompression of the aircraft. They had lost pressurization.
They knew they had parts of the airplane missing, as they quoted.
Okay.
On ATC, on the live ATC feed, which is also on our social media, they talked about, we're stable, but pieces of the aircraft are missing.
Right.
Right.
And so they knew that things were bad, that they were in bad shape.
Yep.
And it's quite an amazing story about how, well, when you listen to the audio of this thing, of this event, the calm and collected manner of the crew in dealing with the emergency, that's something that you don't see in Hollywood movies, because that's not as dramatic. That doesn't get the audience's attention. But
yep.
Here was somebody doing their job and dealing with an incredible amount of stress. And we want to congratulate Tammy Jo Schultz on doing a fantastic job and being able to save 149 passengers on this flight.
And I mean, they were, I believe they were either at cruising altitude or close to cruising altitude. So that decompression, obviously they did the rapid descent as we heard in the news, but there would have been some lack of oxygen impact there too, as well, right?
I believe they were up in the 30, in the 30,000 feet plus range. And what happens with an explosive decompression is suddenly the aircraft goes from being pressurized. I believe the 737 is pressurized to a cabin pressure of 8,000 feet, to all of a sudden ambient air pressure, which would cause a shortness of breath immediately because it basically sucks the air out of you as well. And then a rapid temperature change, which would lead to condensation forming inside the airplane and possibly not being able to see. And then what happens about 35,000 feet is that you have 30 to 60 seconds of what's called useful consciousness. And with the lack of oxygen in the blood, you basically are acting like you're drunk. And one of the criticisms that was posted online when the audio recordings first came out was that somebody said, well, it sounds like she's drunk. Well, yeah, effectively, that's what alcohol does, is it replaces oxygen in the blood and replaces oxygen in the brain, so you start to slur your speech. And the symptoms of hypoxia are very, very similar to being drunk. And so to hear the pilot, she'd probably just gotten the oxygen mask on, and it's a quick donning mask. It goes on in less than 7 seconds or 10 seconds with one hand. Gets the oxygen flowing. It may take the body a couple of seconds to get reacclimated. All the while, you're now in a descent to get down to an altitude where you can breathe without the aid of the oxygen masks. So the early transmissions, the pilot still sounded calm, collected, cool, but maybe a little bit of slurring, and that may have been because of the oxygen mask, or it may even have been just because of that time of useful consciousness and depleted oxygen in the blood. But the other interesting thing that came out of this event was some of the social media posts of passengers who were in the back taking selfies and not wearing their oxygen masks correctly. Now, I mean,
Not over their nose.
Not over their nose. They were just over their mouth. And, well, I mean, the worst thing that's going to happen to you really there is you're going to go to sleep. And that's not so bad. The pilot's bringing the airplane down an altitude where you won't need the oxygen masks anyway. And once you're down below, say, 15,000 feet or so, as a passenger... What do you got there? As a passenger, you don't need to have the oxygen on anyway. So you'll be just fine. You'll wake up and it'll be like, oh, hey, that was a pretty nice nap I just took. How long was I out? About a minute and a half or so. So yeah, the hypoxia there for passengers is not such a big deal, but pay attention to those safety briefings at the beginning of a flight. They're there for a reason, so that you have a chance to save your life, do what you need to do.
I was actually involved in a discussion earlier this week. People were talking about, would it be better to essentially, you know, kind of like the online test you would have to take to pass a security badge, application,
yeah, like
something like that.
Computer-based training.
Would it be good to have people go through that, you know, once every 5 years, almost like you do pre-check, where you actually potentially retain the information because you're essentially quizzed on it, and then not have those safety briefings on every single flight? Because I think by having them on every single flight and also making them, you know, a little bit of Hollywood now, right? People watch the videos and they've tried to make them incredibly creative. And I guess that's to grab people's attention, which it probably does, but do they retain the information that's actually in those videos? And would it be better to give people the information less often, but in a more focused way?
More intense environment. Boy, you bring up an interesting an interesting exercise. And I don't necessarily know the answer. One of the initial problems I have with it, though, is that it's definitely now a bottleneck. And like when we get our badges at the airport, you have to schedule a time to go do it. And then you have to take 2 or 3 hours out of your day to sit there and watch the videos. And then you have to get your photo taken, but that can only be done during certain hours of certain days. And, you know, it really gets to be a hassle. And that's just in our limited scope. If you tried to do that with all the passengers that we have, even annually in the National Airspace System, you'd need quite the facilities and the infrastructure. And then there's a cost to the passengers, because you couldn't necessarily do it for free. And when it comes down to money, very few people are willing to pay for things. Like, you think of how even the price of an airline ticket now, I don't think you're going to save anything on an airline ticket if the flight attendants don't have to do that briefing anymore.
Right.
That'd probably be one of the, well, not the only benefit, but I mean,
you know,
as
if
far
they,
as safety,
if they,
I don't think it would improve safety and reduce costs.
If they couldn't taxi until the briefing was given, I'd say that it could, reduce turnover time.
I don't think they are allowed to taxi until the briefing is given.
So what's interesting is I'm pretty sure that the briefings are given on JetBlue. On the Airbus A320, there are three flight attendants. And so the one flight attendant stands at the front, reads the announcement, and the other two do the demonstration. On the Embraer E190, because of the number of passengers, you only need two flight attendants.
Okay.
And so because there's two flight attendants on the E190, it's automated so that the two flight attendants can give the demonstration.
Oh, so it's a recording.
It's a recording. And I'm almost wondering if you know, I have to pay more attention.
That may even be just because also the E190 is a newer airframe where they have that data stored and they set it up initially to do that.
Maybe, but I've asked them why they do it, and they say it's a crew problem, that it's a lot cheaper for them to just have a flight attendant read the safety briefing versus having to record a new one every time there's a change. Because on the E190, I've heard it changes relatively often. So, not relatively often, but in the few years that I've flown JetBlue, actually going on like 6 or 7 years now, I think they've changed it a few times, and I assume there's a cost to that.
With any kind of production, you need studio time and you gotta pay an actor.
But I almost wonder if with the international airlines, if there are different regulations, because flying both British Airways and WOW Airlines in the last 6 months, both of them were announcing the safety briefing still as we were approaching the runway end, like for departure. We were probably number three, and they were still. I don't know if that was just a situation they had found themselves in, or if who knows.
Come here, Zoe.
Zoe's getting a little. Come here. She's staring at us with sad eyes. I think
she's like, can you guys shut up? I'm trying to sleep. I want to lay down. Zoe. What's wrong?
Anyway.
Poor puppy. Poor puppy. So a very good job to Tammy Jo Schultz and First Officer Darren Ellisor. Tammy was a United States Navy pilot, and Darren flew for the United States Air Force, so it was a very experienced and well-disciplined crew in the front of that aircraft that was dealing with that emergency on that day, and very much the right people in the right place at the right time. Which also leads to a question that you had posed earlier before we started tonight that I believe was a Cora question on with regard to the Hudson flight, the flight that landed in the Hudson flight. What was it, 1549?
Yep.
Whether that pilot in particular, Sully, was the right man for the job, or if any pilot could have, or what was that what the question was?
Something like that. Yeah, you're breaking the rules, Rob. We're supposed to ask these at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, but it just segued so nicely.
Yeah, we didn't want to pivot.
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 That's a Friends reference. Quit it.
Pivot and quit it.
Should we make a podcast where we review Friends episodes? There's got to be one of those.
Actually, have you heard the podcast? Is it like My Brother or My Dad Wrote a Porno or something like that?
I got to edit.
No, you don't. You got to listen to this podcast. It's a guy who basically wrote a really, really, really awful porno.
Adult movie.
No, it's like a book.
Oh, what? Yeah, that's not what.
Yeah,
we can't use this. We can't use this at all.
Really?
iTunes is going to take away our G-rate.
No, they won't. No, I change every episode. But we can see they read the porno one sentence at a time and analyze it, and that's the podcast.
I didn't know there was dialogue in that kind of.
You've got to listen to this podcast. It's great. Anyway. Other than the fact that you just broke the rule, yes, that was a question on Cora. It was essentially, was Sully the right man for the job, like you mentioned, or could any airline pilot even accomplish what Southwest just what the SWA, what was the flight number?
Southwest 1380, I think it was 1380.
Yeah. So what the crew of Southwest 1380 accomplished as well is like, is it right person, right place, right time? I mean, she was one of the first pilots to be Was it admitted
an
to
F-18?
Yeah,
an F-18 pilot.
Exactly,
or a female F-18.
A female F-18 pilot. Right, and she joined at a time where women were not allowed to be in combat. I think right.
Correct, and that was true up until just a couple of years ago.
So, you know, it kind of gets you thinking. Okay, is this right person, right place, right time? You know, and I think it goes back to the tests that the NTSB did after these events, where they put people in a simulator and they figure out what the success rate is. I don't know that off the top of my head. I'm sure you do, Rob.
Oh, with just quoting the movie Sully, where he asked how many times or how many practice sessions did these pilots have before they were able to pull off the return to those other airports. And the statement that was 17. And they got 17 practice shots at an emergency in order to actually have a successful outcome. The movie didn't really say that it took them 17 attempts to actually make it or take care of it. However, when it comes down to emergency training and our execution of procedure, we very much have to train to a very high level, to a very high standard, in order to perform on the day. I don't know if I've mentioned this in the podcast before, but it's something that I talk about quite a bit in my actual flight instruction, is that there is no rising to the occasion. You rise to your level of training. And if you think like the movies Rocky, in Rocky I, he was kind of a bum fighter. He lost half his fights or more, and when he actually got the shot against Apollo Creed, he didn't have great training, he didn't have great fundamentals, but he had a lot of heart. Well, he lost that fight. And then in Rocky II, he trained harder, he trained better, he was a better fighter for the experience, and he rose, you know, he rose to his level of training with his heart, and all of that in combination meant that he was able to defeat his opponents. Well, Sully was a glider pilot for a long time. He was a fighter pilot, having to do things in high performance aircraft. And Tammy Jo, she was also a fighter pilot, having to deal with rapid decision making and having to know your systems and emergency procedures and all that. And when you put two very well qualified crews together, and in this case Tammy Jo Schultz and Darren Ellisor, you get an outcome. You have a high probability of a successful outcome in these scenarios. And I don't want to say it was necessarily luck, but it was very much well-trained people executing well-practiced maneuvers and procedures to have essentially an expected outcome. When you have a multi-engine aircraft, you train for engine failures. You train for explosive decompressions. You train for fires. You train for all of the situations that they really had to deal with. And they executed air traffic control. They trained for these kind of things, and air traffic control did everything that they could to get that jet in safely. And even today, I was at Hanscom saying goodbye to some people, and the crash phone rang at Massport, and there was a twin engine Piper Apache. No, was it an Apache? It was an Apache that was reporting having a sputtering engine or loss of power in one of their engines. Now, today was a very bad weather day. It was overcast 700 feet and rain. Visibility was a mile and three quarters. I mean, they had to shoot an ILS approach on one engine dealing with a real world, no guff emergency. And they rose to their level of training and they got it on the ground, and they were okay. So, I mean, a successful outcome in that. And these events are very rare, but that's why the training needs to be so intense for them. And the airline pilots, they every 6 months, they go through recurrent training just to make sure that the intensity is there in training. And the old adage of the more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in combat holds true in these cases. And the crew in the back, the flight attendants, they did their job of trying to keep a hurt passenger alive. And that's not something that you expect to deal with on a daily basis at all. But they were called to do that, and they performed their duties. So they very much rose to the outstanding training that the airlines give, that Southwest Airlines gave, and that is to be commended. Yeah.
And it's to be commended for the entire flight crew as well, because obviously we know the flight attendants, you know, in the back, behind the armored flight deck door would have been, you know, rising to the level of their training as well. And, handling the fact that there was a decompression and a hole in the side of the aircraft. And,
yep.
You know, we don't know their names. We were trying to find it, but they also did a tremendous job, and should be commended as well in handling that emergency.
Yep. And so my big hope for the audience here is when you get on the airliner, one of the first things I do when I sit down in the seat is I pull out that emergency card and I look at it and I identify my emergency exits. And right there, I'm training my brain. I'm preparing myself for what I may have to do as a passenger in order to save my life or help other people. And then pay attention to those briefings. Pay attention to the safety briefings. They're there for a reason.
Especially if you're sitting in an emergency exit row, and almost every flight attendant will come up to you if you're sitting in an emergency exit row and say, are you willing and able to assist?
Yeah.
And everybody just says yes as they're looking at their iPhone or reading the newspaper. And that is almost even more important, because when this situation happens, you are going to be the second line of defense. Obviously, the flight attendants who are trained to handle these situations will be the first line of defense, but you will be the second line of defense in helping people get off the aircraft safely. And I think under 90 seconds for most aircraft is what they shoot for. So I think it's even more important to consume that information if you're in an emergency exit row, because you're going to need to help.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And speaking of the emergency exit row, I got to sit in the emergency exit row on a JetBlue flight back from Sun and Fun.
Yay!
Now, just in case people who are unfamiliar, Sun and Fun is one of the first air shows of the air show season. It occurs down in Lakeland, Florida, and it runs for just about a week. And it's not quite as big as Oshkosh, but it's really the first big show of the year. And for those who follow along on the Facebook page and on our YouTube, I was down there for basically 11 hours of the show. I got in there at 7 a.m. It wasn't even really open yet. And I wandered through the campgrounds and I bought my ticket and I went inside and I filmed some early morning stuff of the pilots and crews pulling the airplanes out. And it was a marvelous time to kind of see that show wake up, how to see the crew and the people behind the scenes and how they get it ready to go, as well as talking to some of the people in the displays. So I got to talk to Quest Aircraft and do an interview and questions about the Kodiak, which is an awesome turboprop airplane. And then I got to talk to my buddy, Bill Finnegan, who is a longtime aerobatic competitor and coach. And he got to tell us a little bit about the Pitts S2C and some of the lineage of the Pitts aircraft, as he was a representative for Aviat, which builds the Pitts and the Huskies. Who else did I get to talk to out there? I got to talk to Scott Scooter Yoke and his P-51 Quicksilver.
That was a beautiful airplane.
Oh, it is amazing. And I don't know that it necessarily came through in the video. I tried to put it in there and enhance the audio as much as I could. But he has some black stripes and some black panels painted on the airplane. And inside those panels are these beautiful purple metallic dots. And you have to look really close and the light catches them just right and they begin to glitter. But there are enough dots on that airplane for every U.S. military service member who has ever been a part of the armed forces. And it's in there specifically for that. So all those black panels, if you get up close on that aircraft, you'll actually see those little dots, those little metallic dots. And it just adds to the airplane. And when they built it, everything they did to it was purpose built. To honor or have some kind of meaning. And Scooter just flies that airplane beautifully, and it's got an amazing sound. And the opening of the podcast is actually Quicksilver, the P-51, doing a high-speed pass, and you hear the whistle of the gun ports as the aircraft goes past the microphone. And I chose that specifically because it's a beautiful sound that I've loved for as long as I've been going to air shows and getting to see the P-51 fly. And then finally, I got to wrap up with Michael Goulian.
Yep.
And doing an interview with him, which I asked him for 5 minutes, and he graciously gave me 10, I think just shy of 12, actually. And I thanked him very much for being a part of that, and congratulations to him as well. The following, let's see, that was a Thursday that I was down there. Saturday, he left for Cannes, France, for the Red Bull Air Race, which he placed third in, with making it his second podium of the season. So there's been two races so far, and he's been on the podium for both of them, and he's currently the points leader. Thank him very much for being generous with his time and sitting down to talk a little bit about air shows and aerobatics and competitions. And then once I was done with that, I ran to the car, drove about an hour back east to Orlando, and got on the airliner basically as they started boarding, and then made my way back to Boston to be at work the next day.
it was a day trip. It was literally a day
trip.
Yeah,
it was literally a day trip. So,
well, we appreciate Rob taking the time to go down there, and obviously everybody that gave their time to interview and help us present you with new and updated content. And I'll do a plug here. All of this content is available on our social media. Follow us. All of the videos that Rob took are on YouTube. We've got some content on Twitter and Facebook as well, and Instagram. People he interviewed, some of the pictures he took down there. So check that out. Plain Talk PC, and we'll mention that at the end of the podcast as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if anybody else has things to share out there with us, you can email us podcast@plaintalkpodcast.com.
Both of our accounts may reply to you at the exact same time.
Yeah.
We had somebody tweeted us this past week asking who handles social media, and Rob and I replied from our personal accounts at the same time saying he does.
He does, yeah.
I think it was confusing, but hilarious at the same time.
It was funny to us, and at the end of the day, if we're not having fun, you're not having fun. Wait, is that how this should work? Oh, well.
Speaking of fun, going back to sun and fun.
Yes.
Did you get any sun?
I did. I got a nice, I didn't burn, but I was definitely, I got a nice base that disappeared almost a week later. My buddy Pete Muntean, who actually won a scholarship from the Kings, he's a CFI, but he got a scholarship for continuing education. And after his luncheon, he and I were running around together with our buddy Adam Messenheimer, and by the end of the day, I was like, "Dude, you need some sunscreen, bad." And he was pretty pink, and I think the next day, he posted a video of the application of spray-on sunscreen, and for some reason, the volleyball scene from Top Gun came to mind. Kinky. Anyway. Pete, hope you didn't get burnt too bad, buddy. And congratulations on the scholarship. That's some good stuff.
Congratulations.
If you want to spend that up my way up north, come on up to Boston. We'll take care of that.
We should talk about financing on a podcast episode one day, because that is something that is a pretty common problem for people trying to get into the industry. Not today, but funding a private or even funding any rating whatsoever is very expensive, and a lot of people pay for each lesson over time, and there are funding options available out there. And obviously Rob and I are always trying to plug to people to kind of get up there, get out there, get flying. And obviously learning about that can help kind of get you jump started alongside the Discovery flight that you talked about on the podcast last week with Mark.
Oh yeah. There's scholarships, there's loans, and there's even the get a job at the flight school kind of thing and get an employee discount and spend some of your paycheck on maybe an hour a week of flying. There's been a lot of pilots who came through that way.
Now, I know that used to be common 50 years ago. Is that still common today? Is that still possible today?
I don't think you see it too much around here. One of our line crew guys, Michael, was was basically doing that. He was working as a manager and a line crewman, and then also working on his instrument rating at the same time. Prasuna was doing the same thing with, while she worked on her CFI. She's already a commercially rated pilot in single multi-engine land. So it's maybe it's not that uncommon. And
it's awesome. That's good to know.
At the university level, you see that too. There's a lot of student employment at the university airports that, you know, at Kent State University, where I'm from, and that definitely helps out, puts a little bit of money in your pocket, and helps defer some of the cost, teaches you responsibility, gets you a little more face time around the airport, and people get to know you and your personality. And I've even seen people get jobs at bigger airports with companies like JetBlue, and then they build that reputation with the company, and the company likes to hire and promote from within as well. So once you have the time where they could hire you, they're going to be more eager to take somebody who is already in the system and already has good experience inside the company and a solid track record of being reliable and trustworthy and a hard worker.
That's interesting. And I've actually heard of one of the flight attendants on one of my JetBlue flights, they were working towards, you know, getting in the front of that cockpit door instead of staying in the back. That was one of their goals.
I did have a lady come out when I was working in Ohio. She came out to my hometown airport, and she was a flight attendant for United Express, or back then it was ExpressJet before they got bought. And she said exactly that. You know, I work in the back. I want to work in the front now. I said, okay, well, let's take that passion and let's run with it. Let's turn it into something. So it's totally possible, and whatever you need to do, I've seen people, you know, do an hour a week or so, and they wish they could do more, and there are people like that that we really try and help in any way that we can to get them going, because there's still a pilot shortage out there. We still need more people.
Yep.
Need more people to get
and
into
it. And a CFI shortage as well.
Oh, yeah.
CFI shortage. So going back to Sun and Fun, I think one of the things that at least I've experienced is a mental barrier to entry to these events, right? So there's Oshkosh, there's Sun and Fun. What does it take for somebody to go to one of these events? I mean, obviously, they don't have to fly their own plane there. They don't have to go in a four-seater. They can, as you did, fly JetBlue, drive an hour, or, you know, potentially fly into probably an airport.
Tampa.
Yeah. Or in the case of Oshkosh, you know, fly into a local airport and drive or, you know, something like that.
Milwaukee, Appleton. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's air shows all around the country, mainly from March until around October. I mean, and then there's a bit of an off season as the performers get their airplanes annualed and inspected and improved, and they work on new maneuvers or improving their show and presentation and interaction with the customers and the guests. But you can watch the local newspapers or just pay attention to the news. If there's going to be an air show in your area, normally it will be advertised. And most states have one or maybe even more per year. In Ohio, I specifically remember going to the Youngstown Air Show and the Cleveland Air Show. There's also one down in Dayton, Ohio. And just across the border into Kentucky, there's Thunder Over Louisville, where the air show box is actually right over top of the river.
Wait a minute. Is that an air show and not just a fireworks show?
So it's Sarah also an air show.
So that was recent. That was last weekend. So about a year ago, when I met Sarah, I specifically said she was, you know, she's very excited about fireworks, and the 4th of July fireworks show in Boston last year was, I guess we just couldn't see it, or maybe it was a little bit underwhelming. You know, Boston always does a great job with fireworks, and I think it might've just been our point of view, but, or our perspective from where we were seeing the fireworks. Yeah. But I did a Google that night for largest fireworks show in the country, and Thunder Over Louisville, Thunder over Louisville. It is almost now like midnight, so we have an excuse for garbling our words. But came up, and it was, you know, it's a gigantic fireworks show, and my father's retirement party ended up being this past weekend, so we didn't get to go, but maybe next year. It looks like it's a great event, and especially if there's an air show, that's even more awesome.
Yeah, one of my groomsmen for the wedding lives in Louisville, and he was texting me photos of F-16s and F-15s. Apparently, the Massachusetts Air National Guard sent two F-15s down to do the demo down there. So he was like, "Hey, your boys came all the way down from Massachusetts." I'm like, yeah,
that's
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, is the Massachusetts Air National Guard on a federal level or is it on a state level?
Yes. So it's okay. A little A and a little B.
Gotcha.
They're located out in, I can't remember if it's Barnes. I think it's Barnes, which is an airport that you as a civilian can fly into. And I was just there either last week or 2 weeks ago, and the tower actually vectored us out because there was an F-15 coming in to do the overhead break, where they fly in over top the airport at about 1,500 or 2,000 feet, and then they roll onto their side and do this big old descending turn about 360 degrees or so and come in to land on the runway after depleting all of their energy. And one of the reasons that they do that is they're practicing for the combat situations where you want the aircraft to constantly be changing position when you come into land, and not just flying a nice predictable straight line so that bad guys can shoot at you. And so we got to see that from the air, which is always cool. But then you got to watch out for their wake turbulence to make sure you don't fly through it, because they are a bit heavier than we are, and pulling a bunch of G makes a bunch of wake turbulence.
While Rob was at Sun and Fun, I was in California. And
California.
Thanks, Arnold. Driving the one from San Francisco down to San Diego, and the amount of aircraft that I saw, both military, local, state, was amazing. Just off the side of the highway, there was actually, I'm pretty sure it was a pilot in training, because the helicopter kept flying a left traffic pattern over a just a little landing strip right on the coast. They would take off, you know, look like an upwind, look like a crosswind, look like a downwind, look like a base, look like a final. They would land and do it all over again.
That does sound a little strange. Helicopters' normal traffic pattern is right traffic, as opposed to us airplanes, where we use left traffic.
Interesting.
That's intentional to separate the whirly birds from the fixed wing aircraft.
Well, the left traffic pattern was out over the waters, and the right traffic pattern would have been over the highway. I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
Yeah, there could have been something, too, where the airport standard traffic pattern is, you know, all operations are left traffic to avoid overflying people that write letters and complain.
Saw that about an hour earlier than that. I was just kind of driving on the side of the road and saw an F-18 fly over me, and I said, So we pulled off, and I ran up to the fence. It was a military base just north of San Diego, and I got to watch two F-18s take off in
formation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And another set of two right behind them. It was really awesome. And then when we were in San Diego, saw a bunch of F-18s also just kind of departing. We were filling up for gas, and the entire car shook. We were right across the street, and the entire car shook. It was a great experience. A lot of aircraft down there. I was probably overwhelming Rob with texts, because he was at Sun and Fun, and I was literally sending him all these videos. I've still got a bunch of videos that I took on the trip that I'm going to upload to our YouTube channel and social media, so you'll get to see them. I got a lot of good shots. You'll get to see that helicopter flying, the traffic pattern, etc. Maybe not as exciting as what Rob encountered down at Sun and Fun, but I think it's pretty exciting stuff.
Boy, I think I used all my data uploading all those videos. I was basically running around and interviewing people, and then going and editing whatever I'd shot, like just right there, and then uploading it and keeping everything plugged in and waiting for everything to be.
I love those three videos.
No, we will discuss those no further.
Episode 100, we're going to have a special treat for you guys. If you stick around till then, there will definitely be a great birthday treat, I guess we'd call it, because it'll be number 100 anniversary, whatever the case is. one more plug about my California trip. JetBlue, you guys did a great job with Mint. I know that sometimes we go back and forth between talking about being a passenger on an airplane and flying airplanes. I think we have a good balance on the podcast, so I want to take this time to say that JetBlue did upgrade me to Mint because I guess they wanted to get a standby passenger on the plane, and me being the nice person that I am, gave it to my girlfriend.
What is Mint?
Mint is their, like, essentially their first class. And so they, so Sarah got to sit at the front of the aircraft, and they have fully reclining seats on their, it's all only on their A321s, which used to be transcontinental. Now I think they do it for flights to Aruba, et cetera, et cetera. But they give you little socks. They give you, a really good professional grade eye mask, like something that you'd potentially buy in the store if you wanted to keep it for a few years. It was really good quality. She looked like she was having a great time. And so I not something that I would potentially pay for, not really my style, but definitely beat expectations.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Very good on them. Well, speaking of formation, watching those F-18s take off, this is what they do when there's a flight. Not a fight, but a flight.
Lineup and wait, runway 231, Echo X-ray flight.
So when you're in a flight,
250.
The tower communicates with you as if you were one aircraft, just using one call sign. And so here he was clearing us as a flight. So in this case, I'm acting as the flight lead, so I do all the talking.
211, Echo X-ray flight, proceed on course, runway 23, clear for takeoff.
Good takeoff, 23 on course, 1 o'clock, sir.
And then once he cleared us for takeoff, I look over at the wingman, and I give him a hand signal that basically I swirl my fingers and point straight ahead, and at that point, I'm gone, bring up the throttle, fly the airplane, and then he does the same after whatever interval we briefed on the ground beforehand, and then he comes and joins up on me, and we fly out together. And from there, you're
on course over to Boston. Acro flight switch 24-4.
Oh, there you go. There's your call sign. So is that? So it's still using the call sign of your aircraft, right? It's still using the tail number of your aircraft.
Yeah. So there. Yeah. I would say extra 211 Echo X-ray flight.
Boston approach. Extra 211 Echo X-ray flight of 2 1500 off of Hanscom.
Extra 211 Echo X-ray Boston. Ident. Say destination and requested altitude.
Okay, so there we just check in as a flight, and you when you change a frequency, you want to make sure that the other pilot goes with you. So there, the tower controller said, contact Boston 124.4, Acro flight, contact Boston 124.4. He goes to acknowledge that he received the instruction. Then I type in the frequency, give him adequate time to put his frequency in and actually make the change. And then I go, one's up. He responds, two's up. And from there, you resume the normal communication. Boston approach, 211 Echo X-ray flight, VFR, climb into whatever altitude, and resume normal communications from there. And he, the wingman, stays on the same frequency as you and listens and still complies with any instructions or anything that's going on there. But as a flight lead, you're responsible for the safety of that flight. So it's not like you're flying your airplane. You're actually flying two or three or four airplanes, because wherever you go, they have to go too. And you make decisions for the flight.
Now, how would you report traffic at that point? So, for example, if the tower says, flight, Echo, Bravo, Foxtrot, et cetera, et cetera, traffic, 12 o'clock, 2 miles, you would say traffic in sight or looking for traffic. Do the other aircraft have to say that as well?
Not necessarily, because all the wingman should be doing is watching my airplane. And his job is to keep in position on the leader, whether it's me or the other person. And the lead keeps the wingman safe and separated from other airplanes. So on this particular flight, about 4 hours later, when we were arriving at our destination, there was a KC-135
500 to 1,000 feet above us going into Atlantic City. And I saw that airplane and made a maneuver with the rest of the flight to make sure that we stayed well clear of his flight path in order to avoid any wake turbulence that may cause both of our airplanes to be upset by that. So as the leader, that other guy is, or I'm sorry, the wingman is putting a lot of his trust and his faith in the leader and following, knowing that that leader is there to keep them safe. And there's a bunch of hand signals to communicate different things for different types of emergencies, whether you've got engine or radio or you're having a physiological. And there's even positionings, whether I want him on my left side or on my right side, and considerations for the flight lead as to where you put them and why you put them there. And always trying to keep them up sun so they're not staring into the sun as they look at your airplane. And flying formation is a lot of fun, and it requires a lot of coordination before the flight and during the flight to make sure that everybody stays safe. It definitely some of the most satisfying flying I've done is formation flying. And there's something about sharing flying with someone else who's in your airplane, but then there's something completely and entirely different with sharing flight with someone who's following you around and looking over and seeing another airplane there and being like, "Hey buddy, what's going on? You doing the same thing I'm doing?" Yeah, you are.
I'll have to experience that sometime.
Oh yeah.
Sounds like a good thing to try, experience, etc. Hey, it's after midnight, and as we come to the end of the podcast, we, tune in 2 weeks, we're going to have a section on aborts. It's something that we'd wanted to talk about today, ran out of time. That's perfect. That's no issue there. But we want to talk about aborted takeoffs, aborted landings, and something called the improbable 180, which could potentially happen, 30 to 60 seconds after takeoff. So we can talk about that next time. It's going to be an interesting segment. Make sure you tune in.
Yeah, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And if you do it wrong, it's disastrous.
Yeah. And again, going back to what we talked about earlier, even in, civil aviation, this is something where if you have a really good CFI, hint, hint, Rob, and many other CFIs, there was a time that I was training with Rob and he, in the Cessna 172, there's a little switch you can press that makes it so that, you can still talk to ATC. Oh, so you can still talk to ATC and your passenger can't, or vice versa. And in this case, he made it so that I could not hear what he was saying to the tower. And what he was saying to the tower at the time was, we're going to do a engine out simulation and a return back to the opposing runway. We were taking off on runway 29er out of Hanscom. So we did a return back to runway 11, I think. Yeah. And so I'm climbing out like there's everything's fine. It's a normal day. And all of a sudden, Rob pulls the power. And should I be talking about this?
Simulated
power. I mean, yeah, there was nothing with the mags or anything like that. Just, power to idle, and says you have compliance
with FAA guidance.
Yes. And, okay. Simulated engine out. What do you do? And the improbable 180 is an option at that point if certain criteria are met.
And yes, we'll talk about that next time.
Exactly. Okay. Anyway, so we've got time for one core question, it looks like. So I think this, this kind of sticks with what Rob was just, demonstrating with one of his ATC segments, and goes back to a couple episodes when I was talking about breast ramp instead of west ramp when I was my first time on the radio, which is still a great story. The question is, what are some of the most interesting conversations pilots have heard from air traffic control while in the cockpit? And I think a couple episodes ago, Rob, you mentioned the interactions you have at Lawrence, right? With ATC there, with talking about go one of your sports teams, et cetera, et cetera. There's, things we talked about two episodes ago, the JFK beach landing, So we've mentioned this a lot on our podcast, but do you have any other interesting experiences that you personally have encountered, Rob?
Well, only by personally seeing them on YouTube, and this is something I discovered a couple of days ago, and it's a video called "Very Cool Conversation Between F-22 Pilots and Boom Operators of Refueling Aircraft."
Big old shooting star just now right in front of the jet. Cool.
Can you make a wish?
Not yet. I'll take one.
Here, I'll riddle for you.
Alright, let's hear it.
I can run, but I cannot walk. What am I? A little into something, like think of stuff that runs.
Yeah.
Run on sentence?
Answer you have.
You say what answer do I have?
Yeah.
A nose.
Oh, nice.
An engine?
Yeah, that works.
Dorks.
That's awesome. This is during the refueling. That's great. Yeah.
What's going on?
You guys make any good food?
Whipped up a few pizzas. I don't know, maybe making... Nah, it's pretty much guaranteed. We're going to make some cookies when we're on our way home.
Nice.
Yeah, that conversation, that sounds about right. One of my favorite tales that probably never happened was the fighter pilot pulls up next to the B-52 and looks over at the B-52 pilot like, oh, that poor soul, he doesn't have this awesome fighter airplane that I do. And he goes, hey, watch this. And the fighter pilot does a barrel roll around the bomber aircraft and comes back right back into position next to him. And the pilot of the B-52 goes, oh, that was pretty impressive. Check this out. And the fighter pilot sits there for a couple minutes looking over at this B-52, plugging along straight and level, not doing anything. And after a couple minutes, the pilot goes, what'd you think of that? The F-22 pilot. And the fighter pilot goes, what are you talking about? What'd you do? He goes, I went in the back. I used the bathroom. I made a sandwich and got a cup of coffee. And now I came back up here. So, yeah, those fun stories. Fun stories flying. Well, hey, thanks everybody for coming out and joining us today on the Plane Talk Podcast. If you enjoy the show, pick it up on fun locations such as iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Check out our other content on Twitter at Plane Talk PC and our YouTube channel, which is also Plane Talk PC.
We also have Instagram now. The handle is Plane Talk PC as well.
Wow, we were consistent with that. Good
we
job.
Were consistent. Yes, we
it's
were.
It's like we coordinated.
One thing we fail to mention sometimes is we actually do have a website as well, just plaintalkpodcast.com. You get all the episodes on there, same order that you would on iTunes and Spotify.
For free.
And so, yeah, by all means, check us out on plaintalkpodcast.com. And always feel free to email us at podcast@plaintalkpodcast.com. We check that every 20 minutes, and we love getting your emails.
So. Which we haven't gotten any so far. It's been a lot of 20-minute sections that we just... We're ronery.
I also want to take the time, and I'm ronery, sure Rob does as well.
I'm sure ronery and rary around. Kim Jong-un.
You're done.
Was it Kim Jong-il? It was Kim Jong-il from Team America. Sorry. We're going to get copyrighted on that one.
Want to thank Mark for filling in last week. He did a great job.
Yes, thank you, Mark.
I really enjoyed listening to that podcast episode after it was posted. And so thanks again, Mark, for filling in. And we'd love to have you back on the podcast. Finally, we... asked one of my friends who's an editor for BitLancer, my tech company, one of the tech companies that I work with, to kind of come up with some descriptions for our Plane Talk podcast. And we ended up with some great ones, some of them inaccurate. Number one, a Top Gun flight instructor and his intrepid tech geek student dispense unconventional wisdom as they careen across the troposphere in search of truth, justice, and someplace to hopefully land. Don't miss an episode. Number two, a Boston Tech entrepreneur. Interesting word, but Boston Tech entrepreneur and his gonzo flight instructor share unconventional wisdom while doing things with their airplane that are not recommended, but certainly worth tuning in for. That one got vetoed.
Yeah, no.
Because we will always do things safely in the aircraft. That is a high priority of Plane Talk Podcast. And the third and final, which was the winner, and this will be our new description online. The current description is basically we talk about everything in the universe, usually with the answer of 42. It was a great start for our first five episodes, but it's time to move on.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Find out what happens when you cross a talk show format with in-flight pilot training and a hefty dose of irreverence for practically everything, including gravitational forces. That's Plane Talk with Matt and Rob. I think that sums it up pretty well. So if you got friends out there, and as Rob always said, enemies, you know, tell them too about our podcast. We'll see you next week on episode 6.
Hey, thanks everybody. Take care and fly safe.
I'm so lonely.